All right, guys, we'll get started. I didn't actually realize we were running a bit behind there, so I apologize. Today we're going to talk about using Windows Azure with Windows Phone 7, iOS, Android, and Windows 8. So this is quite a challenging talk. As you can respect, we've got a number of different operating systems here we're working with, and I've got three machines up the back, so fingers crossed we'll do well and all the demos will work. Maybe some clapping at the end if they do. If they don't, I'll take booze. So my name's Nick Harris. I'm a technical evangelist for Windows Azure. So I'm currently located at Redmond. And in Redmond, the weather actually seems to be a bit like it is here in Amsterdam. So very little sunshine and such. But I was walking through the shopping center one day and I sort of come across this mannequin. And I sort of figured, the longer I stay at Redmond, the closer I'm going to get in terms of being that pale. And at the moment, it looks as though I'm pretty close. But, so let's get started here. So today we're going to look at how you can build Windows Azure-based applications that you can build out services that can be consumed by all these different device types. We'll talk about storage, identity, communications, and some of the platform services and tools that you can use to go out and build these. And lastly, as I said, we've got several demos, and we'll do our best to make sure that they all work well. So we're probably going to have to go through reasonably. There's quite a bit of content. A reasonable amount of it is quite hands-on, so we'll be using like NuGet packages and stuff that we've gone and created to help, expedite your development sort of cycles. So there'll be some hands-on bits, and then I've got some samples in the iOS and Android side of things where we just hit F5, but I'll show you how we configure them. But first, I'd like to start with a sample application, and this is called Babelcam. So this is a Windows Phone 7 application, and I'd like to use this to, frame the context of what's possible when you're building out device applications that utilize the cloud. So let's kick off Babelcam. So this is Babelcam, and Babelcam comes with the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone 7. So this toolkit's available at watwp.codeplex.com, and it installs into a directory, which is /windows-azure/wat-windows-phone. And as you can see, the full source for Babelcam is available here. Now, as I said, Babelcam, you can also download it from Marketplace. It's free. It's a pretty cool tool. Essentially what it is it's an OCR translation application. So you can take a picture of some text, which you may not be able to read because of the language, and then you can select a target language for that to be translated to. So we're going to fire this up and have a look at how that works. So over here on the right, you can see that we've just got a standard Windows Phone 7 project, but we've also got a cloud project. So those of you who watched the keynote or have been to some other Windows Azure-related sessions today have probably seen that a cloud project can utilize both what's called a web and worker role. And in this particular case, we're using a web and worker role. So Babelcam has an MVC website here, which allows us to put in some proxy services that will be used. And we'll dig into how these work throughout the rest of the deck. But we've also got a worker role, which allows it to sort of perform some background processing on these images. I'll show you an architecture diagram after the demo here. So we've spun up our services on localhost here. Now we're going to launch Babelcam. So here's Babelcam. The first thing that we get is our authentication screen. And we can see that we've got three common identity providers there, being Windows Live, Yahoo, and Google. So I'm just going to go ahead, sign in using Google. Use NH. Did you guys get that down? Don't go changing it because we'll be using it for the rest of the demos. Sometimes that happens, actually. So at the moment, it's going off and trying to log in, and it's logged in successfully utilizing Google. But we could have chosen one of those other identity providers. Now, the first screen that we get here, so how many of you guys are Windows Phone 7 developers? So we've got a couple people. So with Windows Phone 7, there's a concept called push notifications. And push notifications allow you to essentially push a payload to the device, whether it's an updated tile for the start screen or a toast message that surfaces up on top of the apps, or some raw data, which is just like a package of data which you can push down to the phone. So in this example, we're going to utilize push notifications, and we're going to go off and register with what's called the Microsoft Push Notification Service. So we've done that successfully. The next thing we'd need to do is we'd need to take a picture of some text. Now, if you've downloaded the app from Marketplace, you can go and click on the camera here, and that's going to allow you to go and take a photo of whatever text you want translated. But since we're using the emulator today, we're just going to press on translate a sample text image. So this is actually an image. It's not a string of text. So what we're going to do is we're going to go and say, well, let's take this image and let's try and translate it to another language. So let me pull up the languages here. So what language would you guys like to see this translated to? Dutch? Was it Dutch? Sorry, I couldn't. Okay, yep, Dutch. Okay, let's do Dutch. Here we go. So we've selected Dutch, and now we're going to upload that image. So we've uploaded that image into our storage account. And now what's happening is our worker role is going through and performing a few operations on this, like it's changing the size and changing the color of the image a little bit. But what you can see is that it's finally come back and it's translated the text into, I hope this is a reasonably good translation. Can you guys read that and confirm for me? Is it okay? It's just the image is just some sample text off the web. But as you can see, we've taken an image, we've translated that image from English to English, and then we've translated that English text into Dutch. Does anyone want to see another language? No? Okay, we'll just go with the one. If I go and look back here, you can see some other translations of this same text that I've done. I think that's Japanese. I'm not sure what that one, that's... Sorry, I sort of forget. I think that's French. And we've got some Korean there. So that's Babelcam in a nutshell. So let's jump back to the deck and have a look at how that works. So, Babelcam. The first thing that we did was we authenticated against what's called the Windows Azure Access Control Service. That's what provided us that list of identity providers. That returned back an access token. Now, we utilized that access token to call into Windows Azure to retrieve what's called a shared access signature. So we'll dig into shared access signatures in about 10 minutes, but essentially this allows us to write to Windows Azure storage in a secured way. So what we did is we used that shared access signature to write the image up to the storage account, and then we had our worker role sitting there looking and waiting for any new pictures to process to go and change the or translate the language. And we found one. We did some slight processing on the image, but then we outsourced our actual translation to a couple of services that are available. The first one's the Hawaii OCR service, and that takes care of translating the image into text. So it took the English image and translated it to English text and returned that back to our service. Our service then took that text and pushed that to the Bing translation service. The Bing translation service converted that English text into Dutch and returned back our translated text finally. Once we had that, we needed to tell the phone, hey, we've got your translation. You realize that on the screen I didn't have to hit refresh or anything on the phone. It just surfaced up. I didn't have to poll for any information. What was used there was a push notification through the Microsoft Push Notification Service. So we pushed the translated text down, and it finally made it to the device. So this is the context I'd like to set. So it sort of shows you how you can offload operations or processing up into the cloud to allow you to sort of perform things which you may not really be able to do on a device which has sort of constrained memory and resources. But there were several features in action that we sort of brushed across in that particular demo. We had storage, we had identity, and we had communications, we had platform services. So the rest of the talk, what I'll do is we'll actually drill down into each of these, and we'll perhaps build out small pieces of the Babelcam sample application. So Firstly, I'd like to sort of cover three reasons why you may utilize the cloud for your device applications. So it allows new application scenarios. So Babelcam, in this example, we're offloading that processing of the image to a service up in the cloud. If you've got anything that requires like a real amount of compute, sometimes trying to do that on the device may take a significant amount of time. If you go and outsource that up into, you know, something that's got infinite power for reasonably small amounts of infinite, you can go out and you can sort of build applications that can do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do if it was just a device resident application. The second point here is the cloud levels the playing field. So what I mean by that is if you're perhaps a startup, for instance, or just a developer who's building their own apps, you may not have the capital to start out up front and go out and purchase, you know, $10,000 servers to go and set up within a data center, or these sorts of things. You can go off and you can sort of go and provision, say, an extra small instance, and it's not going to cost you very much to sort of get started. From there, you can sort of go on a bit further and say, well, is my application becoming successful or not? And in the case that it does, you know that you're going to be easily able to scale that service out without having to purchase any additional hardware. It's just really a matter of incrementing a counter to say how many servers you want. The last point here is probably the one of the key points that we're sort of trying to convey within this talk is the cloud provides a way for you to reach across platforms. So if you go and develop your services that are sitting up in your cloud in a way that they can be consumed by not just, say, Windows Phone-based devices, but perhaps Windows 8, Android or iOS, then you're sort of getting more value for your investment in terms of time in building those services. So we'll try to look at ways that we can go and build out these services such that they can be consumed by all these devices. So you build once for multiple OSs. So let's drill into the storage portion. So, just to recap, these were brushed upon in the keynote, but we've got sort of four predominant types of storage in Windows Azure. The first one is Windows Azure Tables. So this is for non-relational structured storage, so consider that you can serialize entities to this. It provides massive scale out, so you can actually have a table there that occupies the full space of your storage account, which is by default 100 terabyte. So that's quite large in terms of how much data you can capture and store in these types of tables. We've got Windows Azure Blobs, which is a place where you can go and store binary data. Blobs can be, for instance, up to 200 gigabyte. But it's a great place where you may be building, say, a media-based application, and you may have images to upload, or you may have video to upload, and these sorts of things. So consider blob storage as a place to store, you know, files. We've got Windows Azure Queues. So these provide persistent async messaging. So what this means is you can enqueue a message into a queue, and then you can have another process dequeue that message and perform some work. So in the context of Babelcam, the web role enqueues a message to say, hey, there's a new image to be processed, and the worker role is polling that queue to pull off that unit of work and then say, okay, well, I've got a new image to process, let's go get it and process it. The last one is SQL Azure. So those of you who are familiar with relational databases and perhaps even being building solutions using SQL Server, it's built on the same SQL engine. It's just a cloud-ready managed service. So when you start working with storage in Windows Azure, there's a few key things you need to be cautious about. The first one here is your, we call them storage secrets. So this is just a picture of my storage account in the Windows Azure portal, and we've got a storage account called SANIC1 there. And that storage account has a set of keys that's utilized to access it. So these keys, they're just like a username and password. You need to protect them. You don't want other people to perhaps gain access to these keys because then they can do whatever they want with your storage account. Likewise with SQL Azure, you know, you've got a connection string. That's got a username, a password, and a target server. Again, you don't want people to compromise your solution and gain access to these passwords. So the key point I'm trying to make here is once you share your secret, it's no longer a secret, and people can then take that information and sort of utilize your storage, etc., at your cost to put whatever they want within it. So we need to figure out how do we keep these secrets a secret. And when you're developing device solutions, this is particularly important because that application code base is not sitting up on a web server, it's actually sitting on someone's phone. And they can go and sort of dig into that and perhaps reverse engineer your code base and extract these secrets. So we need a way to ensure that people aren't going to do this. And the common pattern that we see time and time again is to use a proxy service. So in this particular case, I'll see, there's no laser pointer on this, I'll use my mouse. So in this particular case, rather than storing those storage account keys on the device here, what we're doing is we're storing them up in the configuration in the web role. So what that means is that's hidden nice tightly up in the deployed instance up in Azure. You don't have keys down here on the device. And in this particular case, what we're doing is we're just saying, let's try and send some data to table storage. So we create our entity that we want stored. We push it up through the web role. The web role attaches the appropriate credentials and then writes to table storage. Likewise, blob storage you can do in a similar way. So if you have that image and you want to upload it, you could serialize that image up to your web role through a service and then attach or utilize the appropriate keys and then store that file into blob storage. But in the case of blob storage, this isn't really the most efficient way to go about getting that file up into your storage account. Consider that a web role is just a machine that's hosted up in the cloud. And like any machine, there's a bandwidth constraint on the trunk coming in and out of that. So really, you don't want to be serializing blobs, which can be like, it could be a 1 meg image or it could be a couple meg video. You don't want to be sort of utilizing that bandwidth for something where you're trying to serialize it through a web role. So what we've got is we've got another mechanism that sort of reduces the load on your web role and means that you don't need to scale out as soon. And that's the shared access signature, which we briefly touched upon before. So a shared access signature requires a token. And to get that token, you need a little piece of code. So what we do in this case is we wire up a service in our web role, and we expose that to the device. So the device can request a shared access signature, and that will return a token. Now, that token is time-boxed, which means any person using this token can perhaps write or read from that private storage account for that period of time. After that token expires, they can no longer do so. But what this does is it means rather than serializing that image all the way up through the web role, we can now write or read directly to blob storage. So we've just removed a whole amount of load off that particular web server. So this is best practice when you're dealing with your blobs. And the last one here is just SQL Azure, similar in terms of table storage. It's just a simple proxy. You call in with, if you want to request data or store data, it hits the DB, returns the data back, and then down to the device. So let's have a look at how to build out one of these for Windows Phone. The key point I'd like to make here is the proxy services that we're going to pull down into our cloud project. They're actually you can consume them from not just Windows Phone, but you can go and consume them from iOS or Android or anything essentially that can perform a HTTP request. In this case, we're going to use Windows Phone. So, let's close that out and start a new phone project. Right, so I'm going to select just the stock standard default phone application here. And what we're going to try and build is we're going to try and build that portion of Babelcam where you take a photo and then you upload that to your storage account. So we'll start with the empty phone app, and we're going to need a couple things. We're going to, let's just put a text block here so we can capture the name of the picture. And let's put a button on here as well so we can fire up the camera capture task. So I'm just going to now click in. So we're in the code behind of that page now. And we're going to put a camera capture task in. I'm going to use control dot to resolve that namespace where this lives. Don't worry, I won't be coding for the whole thing. It's just around my snippets. And when we press the button, we want to show that camera capture task. Now, we need to new up that camera capture task. So let's use a snippet here. So we new up the camera capture task, and we wire up to the completed event handler. And once that picture is taken, the completed event handler is going to fire, and we want to do something with that. So let's upload that to Blob Storage. Right. So this is a little snippet for Blob Storage, but you'll notice immediately that if I control dot on this, it's not resolving to anything for me. And the reason is because by default with Windows Phone, we don't have the same storage client library that you do in the full .NET framework. So what we did is we went out and we built one. So similar to the way Scott did in his project in the keynote, you can go and utilize the NuGet Package Manager to find these packages. I won't use the NuGet Package Manager GUI for the majority of this talk, just because it's slower to search and find them. But just to show you for the first one, we're doing storage, aren't we? So there's a number of storage client libraries that we've built out for Windows Phone. So rather than using the UI, because it's slow and we've got a lot of them to pull in, I'm just going to use the Package Manager console. So this is pulling down essentially a component or a building block that you can utilize, and it provides you a storage client library for Windows Phone that you can use against Windows Azure. So if I try and resolve these now, you'll find that it's pulling it from the sample namespace that we've got there. Now, the first step that we do here is we need a reference to the Blob client. And then we need to create a container, which you can consider sort of similar to a folder. And we're going to call this container pics, and that's where our Blob's going to be uploaded to. We take the image name from the text that they've entered on the screen. And then what we do is we say, well, if the pics container doesn't exist, is this a good size for the people up the back? If anyone can't read it, just put your hand up. Okay. It's good? No? Okay. Let me correct this. Hold on. Let's try and let's change the font size here. Fonts and colors. Just make it, it's probably a bit big. Let's make it 14 by default. Okay, so what we do is we create that container if it doesn't exist. And once that container is created, we then go and stream that blob directly to Blob Storage. And that image that we're streaming comes from the result of the completed event of the camera capture task. Now, you may be wondering about the shared access signature. Well, what we've done is, under the hood of this, the implementation of this Blob client actually uses shared access signatures by default. So you don't really need to worry about how that works. So let's see what's going on here. Let's try and build this. So that build is working. Right, so the next step which I want to do is I want to go and say, well, once I upload that blob, I want to associate some metadata with that. And we can use a table client. So our table client is similar in usage pattern to the blob client. We create a table client. We need to put this data in a table, and we create that table if it doesn't exist. It's going to go in the pics table. Now, once that container or the table is created, we want to create some sample data, and essentially we want to store that image name and a URL to where that image is actually stored, you know, publicly facing. And then we just go and add that object to table storage and call save. So let's create the sample data class. Now, you'll note here that this inherits from table service entity. And this is an important concept when you're dealing with Windows Azure Table Storage. Now, Windows Azure Table Storage requires really two key things, and it's called a partition key and a row key. And this uniquely identifies an entry in that table. So if you're familiar with SQL, it's sort of similar to a composite primary key. Obviously, it's not SQL we're dealing with, but the same concept. The combination of these two makes the row unique. The timestamp is just there for more for concurrency purposes. But so that's our sample data, and you can see we've just got a name property and a URL. And that's really it. Now, we talked about proxies, and we needed a proxy to go and sort of push this data up into the cloud in a secure fashion. So at the moment, we haven't actually got a proxy, so we need to build that. So again, we've built out some building blocks that will help you do that quickly. I'm just going to select Windows Azure Project, which is the default. I'm going to add a new MVC3 web role. We'll just use Internet Application. Right, so this is going out and scaffolding just a stock standard blank app. Now we'll go back to the Package Manager console and we'll set our target to be the MVC role. And now we need to build those proxies for both blob storage, the shared access signature service, for table storage as well. And we've got a package here called azure.storageProxy. You notice there that there was a couple more. So if we want people to authenticate against this proxy, you can just pull in the access control one, but we'll deal with access control in a little while. So we're going to go and pull down essentially this new building block, which is going to go in and utilize WCF web APIs to provide these proxy services that this storage client library on Windows Phone can call into. So that's finished scaffolding there now. You'll note as well with all of these NuGet packages we've created, there's some detailed documentation that it drops into the solution for you to show you how to go and configure that bit of functionality that you've just pulled in. By default, it's just going to run in the storage emulator, but you do need to provide, in this case, storage account keys if you're going to deploy it into Windows Azure. So you can see that we can specify a default time here for expiration of blobs, shared access signatures. You can also come, in this case, we're just going to use the dev storage account, but this is our proxy service. So if we were to have the keys here, given this is the server-side portion of the solution, they're safely secured in that, and they're not down on the client. So the last thing we need to do is we need to tell our phone application to go and call into these proxies rather than calling directly to the storage account. So this file here under app start, again, is injected into the base phone template when we installed that first NuGet package. If I uncomment this line here, we're just essentially telling it where it can go and find those proxy services that we've just generated. So they're going to be running in localhost on those three endpoints. So I'm just going to fire up the solution here now. It's going to spin up our Windows Azure project with the proxies, and it's also going to spin up our client application as well. So it'll take a few seconds here. So there's our phone app for storage client library, and we're just waiting on our compute emulator now. If anyone wants to email my manager and ask him to put a few more gigs of RAM into this and maybe a solid-state drive, please do contact me on Cloud Nick, and he'll be reading them. So let's have a look at this. So we've got that solution running up in our compute emulator now. So that's got our proxies in there up and running nicely. And we've also got our client up here. So let's upload pic. We'll just call it, I'm going to hit For those of you, I realize only two were WinPhone developers. If you hit page up on the emulator, you can then type with your keyboard, and it's going to save you a lot of time rather than using the software-based one. So we're going to upload PIC 22. Now, we hit the button. It's shown the camera capture task. We're going to take a picture. We're going to hit accept on that. And now that's going and firing those event handlers and uploading it to our local storage account. So this is a free tool you can download. And I've got it wired up to look at my dev storage account here. So you can see that in my dev storage account, this is looking at my blobs. And it's uploaded PIC 22 there. So we can go and we can look at it. Don't ask me why, but the WinPhone 7 emulator, every time you take a picture of that little moving box, it always returns back a JPEG that looks like this. But either way, it's enough for testing. And this is Table Explorer, and this allows us to go and look at the tables. And we can see that we went and we uploaded that picture to here. So if I copy this out now, this is going to reference our local storage emulator for Windows Azure. And you can see there it is, it's available. So let's do one more, just so you can see there's no sort of trickery going on. Let's hit this, take another picture. Right, now we'll give it a second to upload, and let's refresh this guy. So there's PIC 2233. So cool. So that's essentially the first bit of functionality that Babelcam implements in terms of taking a picture of some text and uploading it securely to Windows Azure Storage. So let's flick back here. I'm just going to stop this before we go back to the deck. So the next thing we're going to look at is identity. So recall at the start of Babelcam, we actually authenticated against Google, but there was also Windows Live and there was also Yahoo as options there. So before we go and jump into a demo, there's a few things you need to consider when you're building out solutions that require users to authenticate. There's three predominant options. The first one is you can create your own. And, you know, 10 years ago, perhaps we were going and implementing our own authorization mechanisms where, you know, collecting usernames, passwords. Sometimes people were just storing them in plain text files, and then people started encrypting them. And then we sort of come out with ASP.NET membership providers. Now, ASP.NET membership providers are great, but if you consider all the websites that you log into on the internet, I sort of find myself that I'm creating a new username and password in many different sites, and it gets difficult to track what my username was at site A and what it was at site B and what the passwords were. So what we've seen happen was a shift in industry where people would start using these single existing identity providers, ones like LiveID and Facebook, for instance. Now, as a developer, you can code directly against that identity provider's protocol. But as some of you may know, for instance, say if you've ever programmed against the Facebook one, that sometimes the protocols change and you need to react quite fast to go and implement those changes. Otherwise, when they roll them out, your solution's going to break. So what I propose as another option that we offer in Windows Azure is the Access Control Service. And this provides an abstraction on top of all of these identity providers. So Microsoft will go and take care of dealing with the individual protocols that these identity providers utilize. They'll deal with going and ensuring that, you know, if that protocol is changing, that they'll go and make sure that it's up to date and released at the same time that the identity provider rolls out. And then for you, it can then provide back one protocol that you go and talk with such that you don't need to deal with all these additional ones. So let's do a demo of that. The back of my head is really shiny. Seems to be thinning out a bit there. That's not good. All right. Okay. So let's do ACS from Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. So I'm in the Windows Azure portal here. I'm going to need to speed things up a little. I'm in the Windows Azure portal here. And what I've done is I've come into what's called the service bus access control and caching portion of the solution. And we can hit new here to create an ACS namespace. So the first thing you need to do is find a unique name for that namespace. The second thing you do is you select a region where you want that namespace to be provisioned. So what we're building here is, I guess, the login page that you've seen in Babelcam. And we're going to configure the ACS to do that. Now, provisioning your namespace takes sort of anywhere between 30 to 60 seconds. So rather than sitting and waiting here on it, we're just going to go to Access Control, Manage. So I selected EU Tech Days, which is one I created that's empty and provides a starting point for us. So we're going to configure ACS to allow us to authenticate using Yahoo, LiveID, and Google. So by default, when you provision a namespace, Windows Live is placed in there. But we can go and select amongst these other identity providers. If you want some sort of corporate ADFS-style authentication, you can go and configure that. If you want to use Facebook, you can do that as well, but both of these require some additional information, being, you know, like develop. If it's Facebook, you need the Facebook app ID and such. So we're just going to use two that don't really require those access keys. So we're going to add Google, and we'll come and we'll add in Yahoo. All right. So that's that. So now we're going to use these identity providers, but we need to configure what's called a relying party application. And a relying party in this context is essentially the application that's dealing or utilizing the access control service to pull down the list of identity providers to authenticate against. If you were using this within a website, say, your relying party would be your website. In this case, it's our app. So let's go and hit add here, and we'll say demo app. We'll enter a realm. So if this were a website again, you'd enter the URL, but because we're building an app, we'll just call it demo app. And we'll utilize what's called a simple web token format, and this is good when you're dealing with REST-based services. So this is the protocol or the format that the claims that ACS retrieves back after you've authenticated against your identity provider will be sort of returned back to your app in. So what this means is if you authenticate against Google or Live, the data that's coming back is always going to be in the same format, and ACS is going to convert that to SWT for us. We need to generate a signing key here and hit save. So the last thing we need to do is we need to specify how claims are transformed. Now, this is information that you may be requesting from those identity providers, such as, say, an email address or a name of that particular user, how we take those and we map them back into the simple web token. And by default here, we can come in and we can hit, generate. So this is going to go and generate that mapping for us in quite a simple way. You can come and create your own mappings, but pretty much we're just doing pass-throughs. So we're saying with Google, the email address that comes back, we want that to pass through into our simple web token as a field or property called email address. And likewise with the rest of them there. So let's hit save on that. So now that's it. So now we can authenticate against those identity providers via ACS and get a simple web token back. But we need to go and create a client application to do this. So let's create a phone app first. So we'll just do, again, a new blank project. Civil app for Windows Phone. We'll call it identity. So, again, what we've got here is we've got a NuGet package that we've gone and developed to help you sort of build out this solution fast. And in actual fact, we've got this package in iOS and Android. I'll show you what they look like shortly. So we'll install the package, and in this case, we call it phone.identity. Hit tab here so you can see the other options. Access control and access control base page. If you do want to use forms-based membership, we do have the option there. But we'll use base page, and that's going to drop into our solution a base page that will have a list view, essentially, that calls out to ACS and pulls down that list of identity providers and binds it so your user can sort of log in using them. So let's have a look at what it dropped in there. Again, it's dropped in the documentation. If we go to pages, we've got a new login page here now. And if we scroll down over here, you can see that there's a user control. And this user control is what's provided, essentially, in that NuGet package. And we've just dropped that on the page. Now, this is going to generate that list of identity providers. But we need to do a little bit of configuration here to be able to use this straight away. So the first thing we need to do is we need to change the default landing page of our application. We want that to go into our pages slash, I think it was login page. There we go. Now, when our app starts, it's going to hit the login page. So what we need to do now is go and have a look at our login page code. So our login page contained that sign-in control, and when it completes authenticating against that, we want our application to then navigate on to the next page that's within our workflow for our application. And we want this to be our main page. Likewise, if your user has logged on the first time, for instance, what this control will do is it'll store that simple web token such that if the user hits the app to log in again, it'll grab that token, and so long as it's not expired, you can then push them straight into the main page without having to go through the process of logging in on the device again. And that's essentially what this does. So when we launch the app the second time, it will navigate to this page, but it'll see that we may have a valid token, and we just want that to push them again into the main page. Now, before I forget, we need to tell this how to talk to ACS, and we've externalized that configuration information into this file. And this is what the user control will use. I think, let me just check what the namespace was. So we'll come back here to the portal. It was EU Tech Days is the one we configured. And I think I named my realm demo app. Right. So now our user control knows how to talk to ACS. The last thing we want to do is we talked about those claims and those claims that are mapped. So what I'll do is I'll put in a little text box here that once we log in, it'll pull those claims from the simple web token and display them on the screen. So you'll realize that I'm doing this in the main page. So after login, we had it redirect to main page. Let me pull this guy across a bit. And I'm going to add a loaded event handler here. Hit F7 to go to the code behind. And now let's put some code in. So here's our ACS token. So I'm going to resolve this. This, again, is something that's pulled down in the NuGet package. And you can see that we're just pulling the claims from the simple web token that we've returned back. And you can see here that we've got those three claims. But what I want to point out is that this here is a superset of all the different claims that you can request from those different identity providers. So your application, when you configure it in ACS, you can request additional claims from those identity providers if they support them. So you can sort of start getting information that may also be useful to your application. Then again, the user needs to approve that application to be able to get those. So if you've ever logged into Facebook from another site, it says, do you approve for application X to request your email address or profile information from Facebook? So that's all related to these claims here. So let's spin this guy up. I think I've done it without any problems there. Well, that spins up. I'm just going to get this Mac on. So now that control is going, and hopefully it's going to successfully hit ACS. Let's see what's going on here for a second. Oh, we should do Bing, shouldn't we? There we go. Seems to be working there. Okay. Let me double check one thing here. What is your URI demo app? Let's close this. Let's try it again. My little thing here seems to be working now. Seem to be having a power problem as well. Okay, power's come out as well. Okay. I'm not actually sure what's going on with this. Let's try and close this and double check I've done everything right. Demo app, realm. Tech Days. Let's try one more time here. And if not, we'll just move on to the Mac. So any questions while we wait for this to sort of spin up and try one more time? No? Okay. So the question was, is there any cost involved with ACS? It is free until December 1st this year. There is a cap on transactions. I can pull up an actual thing at the end of the deck here. It looks like I've got some kind of problem sort of connecting out to the net on this emulator for some particular reason. So let's cut across to the Mac. I'll try and sort of fix this in the background while I do the Mac demo. So all right. So what I've done here is I've configured another separate namespace, which may be good if I've made a mistake in that other particular one. But this is Xcode, and what we've got is we've also got a similar toolkit with similar packages for both storage and also the ACS controls. And this is the solution for that. So you can see up the top here we've got a library of information, and we've also got a sample application. Now, similar to Windows Phone, we do externalize all the config information that you require to configure your application. And in this particular case, I've configured it to go to another namespace, which I might actually try on this one, which is EU ACS Demo. And we've got a URI of WASM Mobile Toolkit. I'm just going to copy this in. And I'll give that a go while we do this one. Right, so essentially, this toolkit then allows you to go out and utilize ACS from not just Windows Phone 7, which I've got the connectivity issues with, but also from iOS and Android. So the service and its offering is completely open in terms of what device you're consuming it with. So let's hit run. Got network issues here as well. Is it the switch? It's not handy. Let's go to here. Can someone from tech just come and check the switch for me? It doesn't look like any of the... Oh, man. It's working now? Oh, sweet. Cool. I was getting a little worried for a second. All right, so let's close that guy down again and just hit start on it. Project run. Right, so that's gone and grabbed the list of identity providers, so we'll wipe some sweat off my brow there. But now let's utilize Google to log in. And in this particular case, I didn't have to enter my credentials because it's cached that token that we've returned back when I was doing some testing prior. But as you can see here, we've just got our list of identity providers. We've logged in. But what's also cool here is in this particular sample, we also use the storage client lib for iOS to show you how you can enumerate through those tables and such that you've got in your storage account. So this one's reaching out to, if you recall when I did the storage proxies on the WinPhone 7 machine here, I emulated that all locally. What I actually did was I published those proxy services up to Windows Azure, and this solution is now connecting out to that. So you can see that it's pulling down data from there, which is pretty cool because it means, you know, one set of services, multiple devices. So let's jump back over here and try an Android application. So, okay, cool. So this is Eclipse. And I'm just going to kick off the Android emulator here. Hit start. Right. There it is there. And you can see what we've done here as well is we've created a set of libraries similar to what you've seen on Windows Phone 7, similar to what you've seen on iOS, but for Android. Now, here's the access control implementation of that particular user control. We've also got a storage client library such that you can go and interact and do these things to upload, say, your pictures or write lines to tables. So it's quite comprehensive, right? And the last thing we've got, again, is another sample application. Now, this sample application requires similar configuration. And I've used, in this case, the same credentials that we utilized for the iOS application. So you can see that our namespace, again, is EUACS, and our realm, again, is the URI WAS Mobile Toolkit. Hopefully that debugger is going to work. So let's launch this and run as Android application. We'll pull this guy forward. So we'll give that a little minute. It is a bit slower on this machine with the Eclipse stuff. But there we go. So let's start the login process. It's gone out. It's hit ACS. It's pulled down that list of identity providers. We hit login, and I don't think the so that was cached again, the credential. But what you see here is essentially the raw token format coming back from ACS. So this is a simple web token. And you can see the claims in here that we requested when we configured ACS being the name, Nick Harris. There should be an email address there, which is nhazure@gmail.com. So that's what the raw token looks like. Let me just see if we can try and get the WinPhone 7 one working here now. Just going to close this emulator altogether. And let's fire it up. So we'll give this one last go on WinPhone. And it wouldn't be good if my WinPhone demo didn't work, would it? So let's see how we go. In the background, I configured to use out the same namespace that I had configured there, but again, it looks like something's not quite right. So hopefully, it doesn't look like it's good. Well, yep. Okay. So let's leave that. And the key point I'd like to make is that the one configuration of your the one configuration of ACS can be consumed by multiple different device types. Be it all of these devices which you've seen today, but also perhaps even a website. So this internet issue won't make good for the phone demo. That should be next. So let's just keep going here, and we'll troubleshoot it when we get to it. Back to the deck. So let's look at communications. So when we talk about developing device application, there's two main means by which that device will communicate with your services. The first one, it's device initiated. So you may have, for instance, a user that clicks on a button and that'll call into a service to receive some information. Or perhaps you may have a background task that that application runs and goes out and pulls a service. But there's also another means, which is cloud initiated. So this is whereby, say, for instance, your services up in the cloud are going to push data to your device without any user or background task intervention being required. So we'll talk about these two briefly. The first thing I'd like to note around device initiated is that you've got different things you need to consider. Okay, how are you going to expose those services on the web? What's the most appropriate way that you can go and expose these services such that you can consume them from these different devices? A good choice may be WCF REST. Another one may be, for instance, OData. Another one may be utilizing the WCF web APIs. But the most prominent point I'd like to make on this slide is that wire format choice is important. And what I mean by that is how are you serializing your data that's going to and from the device up to the service. So there's plenty of different options here, but I'd like to show you a case study of three. So the first, this is going to be 8 user records. So this is OData for that 8 user records. That had a weight of about 8.5 KB. The next one I tried was REST service returning XML, and that dropped the size down to about 1.2 KB. And the last one I used was JSON. And you can see JSON returned back the results in 639 bytes. Now, some people may be thinking, how is this significant? It's just like a little bit of data. You can see just by the size of the text on the screen there that obviously JSON is the lightest of them that I tried. But what this means for your services, particularly for your hosting providers and the money you're paying to have those instances up there, if you consider the scenario that we looked at with the shared access signature for blob storage how we tried to avoid having to serialize that blob through our web role. Likewise, if you look at your web role and say that's got a defined trunk and defined bandwidth that you can utilize, by changing your serialization format, you have a significant impact on how much load, if you're just looking from the bandwidth perspective, that role can go and, serve. So in this case, if you can compare the far left with the far right, it's 13 times difference. So if you had one, let's just say you only had one instance, if you're just looking at the bandwidth constraints, you're going to be able to serve 13 times more users from that one instance. So when you start talking at scale, where you may have millions of users, this has a significant cost impact on you. And it's as simple as changing the serialization format to sort of reduce that cost. And in this case, if we're being constrained at bandwidth, we've perhaps reduced it by up to 13 times. So that's a significant point to take away. The next thing is, so that's device initiated. What about cloud initiated? So most devices, iOS, Android, WinPhone 7, they all provide a notification service. Windows 8 provides a notification service. And this is a way by which you can push down updates to your device applications. So for WinPhone 7, we've got a thing called Toast, and that's that little box up the top. Although we only have two WinPhone developers, do we have people who have WinPhones here? All right, so a few, and so iOS. All right, cool. And the rest, maybe Android or otherwise. But irrespective of that, all of those support notifications in similar forms to WinPhone 7 here. So that's a Toast, and you've also got tiles. So on WinPhone, you can change the tiles on the UI. Now, the key point to note about using push notifications rather than trying to build your own long polling solution is that the push notification services provided by these, Microsoft or Apple or such, they've been implemented in such a way that they're battery friendly. And they're free as far as the Microsoft ones are concerned. And I'm pretty sure they're free for the others as well. But the key point to note is by using these, you're going to ensure that you're not going to start sort of running the battery down on your device because you've got an implementation that you're using that's bandwidth and battery friendly. The other type we have on WinPhone 7 is raw notifications. So contrary to popular belief, it's got nothing to do with tigers, so it's not raw. But what these are is it's a way for you to push data down to your application while your application's running in the foreground. So unlike Tile and Toast, your application do not need to be running. It's something that can be pushed down while your app's not running. With Raw, it's a mechanism for you to inject data into your application while your user's using it. So if we consider the Babelcam sample that we had, we used a Raw notification to push that data down to the device when that translation had finished. Our device was not polling, so we're not using, we're not using up any network bandwidth or anything just to check if there's a translation occurred. It's been proactive and pushed it down to us. So I use star NS up there in the top right because that indicates all notification services, be it the MPNS for WinPhone 7 or the WNS for Windows 8. They all implement this similar sort of strategy for subscribing to push notifications. And the first step is the device requests a channel. Now, channel will uniquely identify that application, say, tile for a device. That channel comes back from the notification service, and then typically you'll push that channel up to a web role, and you'll store it in your storage account up there. Now, the reason that is because your web role has your business logic that's going to go out and determine when to send notifications. So in the case of Babelcam, when we hit register for notifications in Babelcam, it took that notification. We pushed the image up, it translated it, and then our business logic decided, hey, we've got the response in terms of the translated text, now we need to send it. So it pulls this channel that we've stored up there and then composes a notification and pushes that to the notification service provider, who will then deal with delivery of that notification to the device and surfacing it. In the case of Raw, we add a handler in our code base to go and act upon what data's been pushed back. Now, that's a simple straight push, but there's another pattern that we see sort of occurring here, and it sort of goes a bit like this. So What you can do is your web role may push a notification to the device, but it's more to engage the user or have the application, if you're using raw notifications, for instance, react to this event. So we push a notification down. Let's say if we're pushing perhaps, say, a raw message for the Babelcam. Now, the thing with raw messages in Windows Phone 7 is the payload size has a maximum, and I think it's around 3 KB for the body of that raw notification. So let's say we translated some text, and that text resulted in 3.5 KB of data. You don't really want to have to try and chunk that data and push it down as two separate notifications. You could, but instead what we did is we sent a command down to the device using a raw notification, saying, there's a new translation for you, go and get it. So we just send a little command, and then our device can react to that and go and pull that data back. So that's the second way we see notifications used. One is a straight push to push information in, but another to engage either the application or user to invoke something that triggers a call out to your services. So we've got several different types of notification services. We've got the Windows Push Notification Service for Win 8. We've got the Microsoft Push Notification Service for Windows Phone. We've got one for iOS, the APNS. And we've got one for Android, the C2DM. So let's try and do a demo here of doing notifications with Windows Phone using NuGet, and also perhaps Windows 8 notifications using WNS. Just make sure this guy is working, because we'll come back to that in a minute. So hopefully my emulator network issues are resolved here now, but let's try anyhow. So I'm going to do a new project. So we're going to do the WinPhone ones first. So this is a blank WinPhone 7 application. And we're going to implement that notification functionality that we've seen in Babelcam. And we need to pull in a NuGet package for that called phone.notifications. I think it's base page. And this is going to provide somewhere for our user to enable notifications. So we come down, select pages, hit notifications page. We can see here that we've got a little checkbox. So again, similar to the other demo, we need to wire it up such that that page is going to launch when the app launches. So we need to go pages, notifications page. Right. So that'll get our notification fired up at the start. Now, what else do we need to do? We need to add our cloud service for us to register notification channels with, such that we can push out a notification from our service via MPNS. So let's add our cloud project. I think we're running out of time sort of quick here, so I'll try and type fast. So this is going to provide a WCF web API endpoint that the phone can push that channel up to be stored until such a point in time that we determine we want to send a notification. Package, and in this case, we're going to target the MVC web role, and we're going to install our Windows Azure.notifications. So that's our registration endpoint. Well, it pulls it down here just to show you graphically. So we just added the page here on the device that's going to do the step 1 and 2 to register a channel, and now we're adding the registration endpoint here to our web role so we can push that channel up. Then the last thing we need to add to this guy as well is something that allows us to drive notifications down to the device. And this one is called Windows Phone. So it's a management UI. It's a sample. We inject that into your solution as an MVC area, and it gives you like a simple UI to walk through and drive a notification to the device. So let me just show you that. So you can see we've got an area added here called notifications. It's got a push notification controller and allows you to go off and send toast tile and badge notifications. So let's spin this up. Fingers crossed, network will be all good this time round. So it's firing up the WinPhone 7 emulator, but at the same time, it's going to spin up our our MVC website, which has that registration endpoint, and a UI where we can send notifications from. So this typically takes just a little bit to deploy it to the Azure emulator. Any second it should pop up here. There we go. So this is the site that we just composed with those two simple NuGets. We've got endpoints, and this is our web API for pushing that channel up. And we've also got a UI to go and send notifications with. So on the left here, I'm just going to pin this phone application. It's called Phone App 27. So let's launch this. You can see here that I've got a list of other endpoints that I've registered with other other times I've practiced this demo, and we're up to about 27. But if the network's not working, we're going to have trouble getting that channel from the MPNS. So let's cross our fingers there. So it looks, it's a bit bizarre that my phone isn't. I always do that. It seems like the network's working. It's just that the phone doesn't seem to connect out to it. You know what? I might let's close this guy. Let's kill the network. And just let's see if we can get a new IP assigned or something. I actually haven't had this problem with the emulator before, so breaking a little bit of new ground here. So I'm going to spin that up. I'm prepping the Win8 machine over here. Let's hope that this is going to go for us, because we're running low on time. Any questions on notifications while I sort of walk through this here? Okay. Let's try this again. Okay. Just going to log in to this machine. And we'll probably just switch across to Win8 if that doesn't work. So I apologize about that. I'm not too sure why it's not connecting out on either of those past two demos. And yeah, let's just leave that one go for now. So I'm cutting over to my Win8 machine here, and what I've got is we've got similar toolkits for Windows 8 as we do with Windows Phone 7, and they're available at wat.windows8.codeplex.com. And I'll just show you the output of what that will create for you. I'm going to select Cloud App 1 here. So this is our server-side portion of the solution, similar to what we generated for Windows Phone 7. And I'm going to launch VS Express 11 here to do the client-side portion. So this is our client application, and it's being configured to enable notifications. So I created this using the toolkit, and the toolkit provides this little template here to generate all the client code required to create notification-style solution using Azure. It's also got a JS component as well, if you want to use JS instead. It sets a few important settings like wide tiles, so you need a default wide tile logo if you want to use wide tiles on the start screen here. And you also need to enable toast notifications if you want toast. So let's hit start on our server solution. Our server solution is similar in that it has a registration endpoint and an MVC portal to drive notifications from. Okay, so this will kick up in a sec. And once that's up and running, I'll fire up the client, we'll register for a channel, and we'll send a toast notification. Okay, so there's our server-side solution. Let's log in. So again, this is all generated for you. It's stuff you don't need to write. We've got a similar push notifications screen here. where it's got a list of channels. So let's go back to our client now and start our client so we can get that channel. Hit register. So we've registered a channel successfully, and we should have pushed that up to our cloud service. So if I come over here and refresh the page, just make sure we've got the latest data, hit send notification on this one, which should be the right one for this app. And send a hello world. There you go. So that's push notifications from Windows 8. All built out using the toolkit and two file new project experiences. So let's send a tile. While we talk about these, essentially what you should consider when you're building out applications for Windows 8 is that the start screen is the gateway to your application. It's where your users are going to come to look at what's sort of relevant and what's new. And from there, they're going to determine what apps they want to launch. So by lighting up the live tiles, what you can do is essentially, who am I missing here? We'll just add so on again. So what you can do is you can send relevant information to the start screen that's related to your application content, and the goal of it there is to draw your users back into the app. So we'll send a notification here, and we'll come across, whoops, and you've just seen that it's sort of come down, and now it's peaked. So notifications for Windows 8, there's over 40 different variants in terms of the template types. So you've got a very rich array of templates for toast tiles and badges that you can utilize to send them down to your app. And if you look at the start screen here, you can see, you know, the stock app is sending me the latest stock information. So if I compare that to an application like the flashcards here, which isn't showing me anything new and relevant, I may be more inclined to go and click on the stock app and jump into that. So at the end of the day, as far as the Windows 8 start screen is concerned and sending notifications to it, you really want to consider using push notifications with the Windows push notification service to ensure that your tile is up to date and with relevant content to draw those users back to your app rather than perhaps apps that are competing with you. So with that, I think we're out of time. So I'll just put up the resource slide for you. So let's go through the resources. So we dealt with storage, identity, communications. We didn't quite hit platform services, but I'll be covering that again in my talk this afternoon. I may have the WinPhone emulator fixed by then if you want to see that demo. The individual toolkits with NuGets, they're all available here at these bit.ly links. So there's one for WAT WP7, WAT iOS, and WAT Android. They're quite easy to remember. WAT is for Windows Azure Toolkit, and then it's just the actual device name after that. We've got the Windows 8 one as well there. It's watwindows8.codeplex.com. And to answer the question of the gentleman earlier, here's the access control, and I guess this is for MSDN subscribers. You've got a certain amount of free Azure subscription that you get if you're on any of these, be it the professional subscription, premium, or ultimate. And as far as ACS is concerned, you get those free limits as far as, you know, you can have 500K people authenticate against ACS for free up until December 1st. After that, I don't know if the pricing's set, but it's. I think that previously it was going to end in January, and they were looking at like $1.99 for 100K transactions, which really is pretty cheap to allow your users to log in. Don't quote me on that figure because it may change by December, but I wouldn't expect it to sort of shift very far either way from that. So with that, thank you for coming, and I apologize about the WinPhone connectivity issues.